Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's Spiegs and Rosner here with you on 670 The Score. And for Lawrence Holmes, this is probably my favorite Smashing Pumpkins song. Hummer from Siamese Dream would be number two. As a textured guest, that's a really good one. But this is Drown from the first album from Gish. But here's the question, Barry. And whoever's got the knowledge will win the tickets on the contest line at 312-591-6700. What iconic early 90s movie soundtrack did this song appear on? And what was the name of the fake band in that movie that Matt Dillon was the lead singer of? Did I just give away too much? No, I don't think so. They need the movie and the name of the fake band. Call the contest line at 312-591-6700. In our attempt to get somebody who knows their stuff, loves the band, but cannot afford to go to the show to become the winner of said tickets. And I think we have a winner already. It's just that easy, folks. Here comes Herb Lawrence. Herbie running, moving. Look at that. Look at the lateral skills of Herb Lawrence. It's more impressive than I was the other night, vainly reaching for a home run that landed two rows away.
I can't believe you didn't clean somebody out to get that
there
ball.
Was nobody there. There's nobody there.
Did I ever tell you how I got my first foul ball? Story?
No.
So it
or
was.
Or if you did, I've forgotten. I want to hear it again.
Please tell us you stole it from a kid.
No, I was a kid myself, Tony. Although I wouldn't be above that. I did once clean somebody out with my beer box. I mean, hit them hard. It was a 50-50 ball, okay? And I hit them hard with my box. We had big plastic trays then because they weren't bottles or cans. They were poured into a cup and then sealed with plastic.
Oh, right. So you had the big trays with, like, the liner in between each cup?
And a big plastic box. And I hit the guy hard and sent him flying and got the foul ball. But, no, my first foul ball, there's video of that, by the way. A video of that.
Do you have that?
Yeah.
You have an unbelievable ability or the luck in your life to have somehow collected audio or video representation of incredible, bizarre, wriggly moments of your life. Isn't this true? We have the audio of Harry Carey praising your wife's brownies, for God's sake.
And I sent Lawrence a picture the other day of me vending right before Fred Lynn's Grand Slam, the first Grand Slam in the history of the All-Star Game.
Against Atlee Hammaker, right here at Old Comiskey.
At Comiskey, yeah, which then was eventually coined as the way to describe someone who was getting lit up in an All-Star game. I believe it was Mark Grace who did it, who after Ed Belfour got lit up in an All-Star game, called it an Atlee. And for years after that, anybody who got hammered in an All-Star game, it was an Atlee.
Poor Hammaker.
I talked to him in 2003.
Wait, you talked to Atlee Hammaker in 2003?
In 2003, because it was the anniversary of the 83 All-Star Game at Comiskey, and I talked to him about it. And next break, I'll look for it in my laptop. I'm sure I have it. He was incredibly gracious about it. He said it was not easy for a while. It was not something he certainly wanted to be known for, but he was pretty gracious about it.
You know what that reminds me of right there is the beautiful friendship of Bobby Thompson and Ralph Branca into their 70s. I get chills just thinking about it. Bobby Thompson, who had the shot heard around the world in 1951, and Ralph Branca, who gave up the home run and had a terrific career, but his legacy, much like mine, will just be the Feldco jingle. Ralph Branca's legacy was giving up one of the most famous home runs in the history of baseball. And he lived in the shame of it for a long time. But one of the people that helped him, you know, put his career in perspective and move on with his life was the guy who hit it, Bobby Thompson, and they were dear, dear friends into their 70s. So that's cool.
Here it is from June 9th of 2009.
This is the other thing to know about Barry, is that everything he's ever written or thought about sports is in the laptop that he brings to the show. And it's not even that it's in the cloud. It's not like you're connected to the internet and it's in the cloud. It's just all right there on the laptop.
Well, you never know when you're going to need something.
No, it's phenomenal.
Right?
It's a beautiful thing. That's why you're a Chicago sports treasure. Meanwhile, I was looking at this. I've had a lot of time to write and look at my writings and figure out what I have. And I put the website together. MattSpiegel.com, by the way, if you don't know, you can go there and check it out. All sorts of stuff is there at MattSpiegel.com, I-E-G-E-L. But I have stuff in on a hard drive over here, on a hard drive over there, on a an external drive over here, on a thumb drive over there, on Dropbox over here. I do not have, and yet you have everything you seemingly have ever written on the laptop.
Well, every time I get a new laptop, I just transfer all the documents over so that if I need something, I don't have to go searching.
Crafty.
I can find it quickly.
Crafty.
Although the cloud's probably a better idea. But this is Atlee Hammaker on July 9th of 2003. Yeah, I know. I've heard all the stories about how the 1983 All-Star Game and how it ruined my life. What people don't know, because I never really told the story, is that I was hurt going into that game. I had a torn rotator cuff. I pitched 10 innings in San Diego a few days before that.
Oh, God.
And I was hurting, but I wasn't going to miss the All-Star game. That's a chance of a lifetime. It was my second year in the big leagues. I was told not to pitch, but I had to. Then I made a couple starts after that game just to make it look like I was okay, but it was bad. I was finished.
And was he finished? Was his career finished at that point?
No, I'm going to go on. I'll get to that.
If only there was a way I could look up Atlee Hammaker's stats.
Yeah, why don't you go
Do you have a copy of the baseball encyclopedia over there? Do we have one? What year is it? What year is that vintage? Remember when that's what was in the corner of the studio at the sports radio station?
Oh, I do. Man. Yeah, go to Baseball Reference.
That's a great idea.
He had come into the game as one of the hottest starters in baseball. But of course, in this game, gave up the first grand slam in All-Star game history, seven earnings on a walk and six hits, and the AL won big. It was the first National League loss since 1971.
Wow. Atlee Hammaker pitched a lot more after that, 84, actually just six starts in 84. So it must've been an injury right there that he missed almost all of 1984. After he got hurt
still
after the All-Star break.
Still won the NL ERA crown that season?
That is true.
But he could only make 23 starts and finish 10-9. Is that also correct?
Yes, a 2.25 ERA, and he went 10-9.
Went on the DL shortly after that, had shoulder and elbow surgery in 1984, making only six starts. Ineffective in 85, missed all of 86, resurfaced with the White Sox.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Resurfaced with the White Sox in 1994 after 2 years off completely and threw in 15 games over the next year and a half for the White Sox.
In 15 big league seasons, he went 59-67 with 366, made only 152 career starts after such a great beginning. That last 4 years was rough, but I wanted to get back. And then in 94 with the Sox, we had a good chance to win the World Series. Obviously, that's the strike year. We had high hopes in 95, too, but it didn't work out. Then in August, we almost lost my daughter in a drowning accident, and that was it. I was done with baseball. I was the 10th man on a 10-man staff, and I got a wake-up call about what was important. And so he walked away with happy memories and no dissatisfaction. The game was good for me and good to me. I'm grateful I played as long as I did. He was in the deal, the Vita Blue deal, when Blue went from
the Giants to the Royals.
Correct, in 1981.
Yeah.
Lost a lot of years to injury, but that's just the way it is. The only thing I miss is the camaraderie in the clubhouse, being part of a team.
Atlee Hammaker, this is your life.
Yeah.
Right here.
I was told I was told by guys who had retired to enjoy it because it would be tough, and that really was tough. But now this is 2003, mind you. He was very happy, leading a happy and productive life. Had five girls, ages 7 to 17. Was doing baseball clinics and raising money for Christian causes and inner city youth sports camps.
That's
so,
pretty cool. So you're saying his legacy should be more about other things that he'd done in his life and not just the Grand Slam, not just to become a noun for somebody who gets destroyed in an All-Star game.
Yeah, he has some great quotes in here about how everything was fine. All the rumors were untrue about how that had ruined his life. It was just a game. I was hurt. I shouldn't have pitched. And he says, ask anybody who asks you, tell them, Atlee Hammaker's doing great. He's living a good life. So that was July of 2003. Anyway, I sent Lawrence that picture of me vending. And it's right before, you see it on TV, right before Freddie Lynn hits the Grand Slam. My first foul ball, Greg Gross batting at Wrigley Field off of Clay Carroll.
Phillies Greg Gross?
Cubs Greg Gross.
Okay. He was a Philly, too, I think.
Yeah, yeah, that's where he probably was more well-known, playing for the Cubs, batting against Clay Carroll, who we think of as a Cincinnati Red, probably, at least I do, but I think he was with the Cardinals at the time.
Okay.
Not sure. I am sitting in the upper deck in about the 10th row of the first section. Now you go up to the press box,
mm-hmm.
and you come out, when you walk up on that ramp, and you look out onto the field, think of that section right about there in front of you, maybe a little bit to the left of that.
Okay.
So there was a foul ball about even with the on-deck circle.
So that's straight back and a little bit to the left. That's nice foul ball territory.
It hit about 20 feet to my left as I'm facing the field. And as soon as it hit the people 20 feet to my left, I knew what it was going to do. It was going to skip off them and go higher. And I thought, well, if it lands in the middle, you know, in the aisle, in the walkway, I'll be there. So I jumped four people to my left, got into the aisle, got up into the walkway. It skipped off of those people, skipped off of people in the upper section, and landed right down in front of me. And I dove on it. And there was about 10 people on top of me. I got the ball. That was my first ball. I don't know how old I was. Maybe 10 or something like that. And I still have that ball.
Oh, that's awesome. It's been a long time since I got one. I got one a long, long time ago. But I
still have, you know, I have dreams. I have dreams about that, about catching home run balls or catching foul balls. I don't know why. I don't know what that says exactly.
You must have been happy at that point in your life when you caught that foul ball. Is that possible?
Maybe.
Well,
hold
on. We're talking about you, right? No. Happy is the wrong word.
How about for a short period of time?
like a 90-minute window, something like
maybe
that?
Maybe not that long. Maybe just while I was holding the ball. Maybe at the moment where I reached up with the ball to show it to everyone.
Total percentage of time happy. In your life to this point, Rosner, total percentage, over 50?
Over 50?
Yeah.
In my life?
Yeah.
Oh, I would think it's less than one.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Probably.
That's, you know what? That's wanting to have the reputation as the lovable curmudgeon that
no,
you are.
No.
Come on.
It's not, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get get you back for the shot from an hour and a half ago or
yeah.
so. Congratulations, by the way, to Ryder Houck, who is the winner of the Smashing Pumpkins tickets. He knew that that song was on Drown. Smashing Pumpkins Drown was on the Singles soundtrack, and that the fake band in the Singles movie was Citizen Dick. Ladies and gentlemen, Citizen Dick was the band. You know what, Barry? When we were talking earlier about Lucas Giolito or other young pitchers who have a certain amount of experience and that you cannot write them off when the stuff is there, and I just think it is so, so absolutely true as long as the stuff is truly there. And I was in a lot of conversations where people were telling me, you know, this Carlos Rodon is never going to figure it out. This Carlos Rodon is never going to find it.
I remember hearing in spring training this year that he's never going to stay healthy. He's never going to be that guy.
Well, staying healthy is a longer-term prognosis. But in terms of a guy...
But it really was based on an unfair assessment of where he was at that point. Because the bursitis is really not that big a deal, and the procedure he had was not that big a deal. So,
but if, for a guy who was first learning the changeup and then starting to throw it a little bit in games and having it developed to where it is now as a useful, very, very useful part of the arsenal that he is smartly using, and a guy who could not find the plate so often and is now throwing first pitch strikes at the demand of Don Cooper, and how transformative he has learned what strike one can do. Just like the power of strike one is so massive.
The power of executing on 1-1. The difference between
one and two and two and one,
which I believe is the most important pitch in baseball.
And for it's probably true. Although, you know, the way that the cycles have come back around now, a lot of teams are being more aggressive against starting pitchers early in games as opposed to trying to draw out those bats, yeah, which is so crazy.
That's
but because they don't want to get to those middle bullpen guys who throw 98, 99 sometimes. They don't want to get to some of those guys. So sometimes you're just going to get ambushed over and over and over again. But strike one with a good pitch, with a well-located fastball, or I've seen him get use a changeup for a strike on strike one. Carlos Rodon's development is absolutely awesome. And is that the best thing about this particular year, this particular usage on the big league level of the White Sox rebuild?
I don't know. Let's talk about it when we come back, because there are some other things we need to get to in regards to the White Sox rebuild. And along those same lines, many of the other pitchers that we only briefly discussed earlier.
It's 670 The Score. This segment is brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. It speaks in Rosner on 670 The Score. Herb Lawrence is looking sharp on the other side of the glass as we talk a little White Sox right now. Matt Spiegel, Barry Rosner in for Lawrence Holmes on 670. The Score. Oh, I love this break right here with the double bass drum. Rosner, speak to me about this particular moment in the White Sox rebuild as fans are a mix between fervently demanding a cookie in the parlance that I'll go ahead and take credit for with Javi Baez way back in the day that made Theo say, no, or I want to cook the whole meal, not give you a freaking cookie, you jamoke. But anyway, fans fervently wanting the cookie of Eloy Jimenez or Michael Kopech, as his girlfriend, I think, posted an Instagram picture in front of the bean, which caused a brief stir last night in social media. So you got fans wanting that, and others remembering that seven is indeed more than six, to steal your bit of wisdom. But where are we in terms of what you're seeing on the big league level from the guys who might matter? The guys who might matter. The guys who are here who might matter when the team is trying to contend.
Well, think of it this way. You're in the fourth month. The fourth month or the fifth month. Help me. The fifth month. Thank you. It's August. I struggle with the calendar, you know that.
I do know that.
Of the second year of what is certain to be a five-year rebuild, the Cubs' four-year rebuild didn't even was a huge surprise to the Cubs. They didn't even think that was possible. And that happened in the fourth year. They went to the NLCS. They did not dream that that was possible.
Crazy bonus year success.
They hoped to be competitive in year five. Hoped to be. They ended up winning the World Series in year five,
which creates an absurdly efficient blueprint that has no precedent.
This is August of the second year.
Right. How long did the Royals have to wait until they got even remotely competitive?
I talked to Chris Getz about it. I talked to Chris Getz about it on Sunday on Hit and Run.
It's a perfect question
because,
for Chris Getz.
Because he was there from 2010 through 2013, and he saw Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane and Gordon and Perez and Duffy and Montgomery, who's now here with the Cubs, and all these guys either in the minors or in the majors or come to the majors and have to go back to the minors. And he saw them suffer like dogs in the big leagues. They were all useless piles of garbage, if you were to believe what Kansas City fans were thinking at the time. And, of course, you made fun of me for years because I kept saying, watch out for these Royals.
Right.
And you would make fun of me every year on hit and run.
Well, and then when they finally won, I would not give you credit.
Of course not.
Because year four of predicting something doesn't – I'm sorry, I can't go with that. To your credit, you stayed locked in. I appreciate that.
I wouldn't give up on the Royals. And then finally in 2014, they go to the World Series, losing seven games to Madison Bumgarner and his heroics, and then win it the next year. And it was brutal. It was absolutely brutal.
And how brutal are they right now? How brutal are they in terms of falling off the other side?
They really messed up by not moving on from their guys because they're not a big market, and they knew they weren't going to be able to hold on to those guys, and they really messed up last year.
Yeah.
But that's what it looks like. That's what it looks like. Guys, get there. I mean, if you were to believe the same people who want to quit on Yoan Moncada after a year of major league experience, or Giolito, or Fulmer, or Covey, or Rodon, or Lopez, or you name it.
Yeah, but do you have different parameters for position player as opposed to pitcher in terms of MLB experience? Like Moncada and Giolito are good ones to think about in terms of the skill sets. Are they in the same kind of spot? Coming from one organization, now here for their second organization.
I think of all young players in similar ways, although I give pitchers a much bigger break because I know how long it takes. We talked about Greg Maddux before and when he really found success at the big level. But I think of them all pretty much in the same way in that I need to give them a couple of years to find out what they're going to be. And if you were to think back to Moustakas and Hosmer and Kane and Gordon.
Yeah.
And Perez and all the rest of them, had you quit on them after a year or two or three, there'd have been no World Series. I'm not saying that's going to happen. Look, I don't know what's going to happen with the Sox. I don't know which of these guys is going to make it and which won't. I do know this. The more you collect and the more you give them the opportunity to develop, the better chance you have. If you look at, and this was before Giolito was at last night that he pitched, he had 33 career starts, or basically 1 year of big league baseball. He was 10-12 with a 5.19 ERA and a WHIP of 1.39, with a FIP of something slightly worse than that. Maddux threw 32 career starts, was 8-18 with a 5.59 ERA and a WHIP of 1.66. So Giolito's numbers actually better. And you shouldn't be comparing anybody to Greg Maddux, but just for the purpose of understanding that young pitchers take some time to figure out who they are and what they can do. If the stuff is there, and you saw, I mean, look, early in the season, Lopez was great. Then he had two terrible months, and now he's had a couple really good ones.
He was phenomenal the other night. I was there in the for the Yankees game when CC Sabathia was also terrific.
Fulmer got off to a terrible start, had two really good ones, and everyone said that's the guy. Then he was terrible in May, and he was gone. Covey, some great, some terrible. Rodon had a couple bad ones at the end of June, and everyone was like, "Yeah, he's just not a guy."
I don't think of Covey in the same category.
I'm just throwing names out there because you don't know. I mean, who knows what Dylan Covey's going to be? I mean, who knows? I don't know. Not at this point. Would I put him on a list with any of these other guys? Probably not. But you know what? I didn't know who Thiago Vieira was when he came over from the Mariners. And I love his stuff.
I
love his stuff.
I knew he was an incredibly hard thrower.
He's got a splitter that falls off the end of the table.
He sure
got
does.
Breaking stuff. I mean, I don't know what he is, but I know the stuff. I love watching Jace Fry.
Yeah.
What's he going to be 2 years from now? I have no idea.
Jace Fry's really interesting. I'm sorry, but Jace Fry, because he's got those five pitches, it's not like it feels like he could be a starter. It feels like it does really feel like he could be a starter. He's a very atypical lefty reliever for right now in baseball, but maybe that's why he'll remain effective.
I like it. I like the stuff. Removing their last each of them their last starts. This is Lopez since May 1st, 4-7 with a 5.29 and a WHIP of 142,
mm-hmm.
and an opponent's OPS of 800, averaging 5 2/3. Giolito since June 1st, notwithstanding last night, was 4-2, averaging 6 innings with an ERA of 4.66, a WHIP of 133, and an opponent's OPS of 7.46. So actually, better than Lopez. You don't DFA guys based on a year in the big leagues. You don't judge them. Again, we talked about it before. It's the constant adjustment. Always the constant adjustment. And for a young player trying to find their way at the big league level,
mm-hmm.
it's really brutal. It's really brutal. And Chris Getz was really good in talking about that the other day.
I don't know how you fix a problem like Yoan Moncada's right now, though. It's a really tricky moment here for Moncada, who struck out a million times swinging and now is striking out a million times looking, and is caught right now because he's mm-hmm. his eye and his patience has long been heralded as a huge part of why his ceiling is as high as it is. So now, is he supposed to not trust that? It's a very dangerous moment, isn't it, for Yoan Moncada in that way?
I don't see it that
way. You don't?
I think it's part of the process.
Oh, boy.
I don't overreact to these things, Matt. I mean, Ryan Sandberg went 1-for-31 to start his major league career,
mm-hmm.
and everyone said send him down. And he wound up...
But we're talking about 167 games.
Yep.
You know?
It's a season.
It's just one season
in the big leagues, is what that is. I don't overreact to it. I'm not saying Yoan Moncada is going to be what they hoped he would be, but I don't know what he's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know either about Moncada. I worry about the mental side of all the strikeouts.
Well, then
specifically,
if he can't handle that, then he doesn't belong here anyway. You are going to have times at the big league level where you are completely lost. I mean, there's not a lot of Chris Bryants who come up and do what he did. It just doesn't happen very often. So happens that the Cubs, every single guy they brought up, seemed to have no problem succeeding at the big league level. It was remarkable.
Well, except for the guy who's in the MVP conversation.
Yeah.
That takes you to an interesting place.
Right, how long ago was that?
When you worried about Javier Baez?
Yeah.
When guys like me wanted to trade him to the Mets for Zach Wheeler or the like? When guys like me were convinced that the swing was just too damn long to ever really catch up to big league pitching.
And now he should absolutely, it's him and Arenado as far as I'm concerned.
For the MVP?
Yeah. And
no love for Carpenter?
It's an amazing run, Herbie. It's an extraordinary run. I'd probably have him third right now. Maybe Freddie Freeman is fourth.
We also have
a lot of baseball left.
Yes, we do. Standings are going to dictate a lot of that.
I think so. I believe so. I think best.
I'm okay with that. By the way,
best player on the best team, I think, is a good place to start the conversation. Javi Baez is the best player on the best team in the National League,
which is astounding considering everybody else who's here.
Yeah, and you have to watch games, and if you watch the impact he has on every game. Even on a game in which he goes 0-for-3, he can steal a run for you.
Mm-hmm.
He's also going to steal runs for you defensively. He's an amazing baseball player, and it's amazing what he's done this year. For me, it's those two guys right now. But back to Moncada. I am not going to overreact to what's happening right now. There's a lot of ugly, and I think it's normal. I think it's absolutely normal at the big league level to go through these kinds of things. Are these extreme? Are these extreme examples? Maybe.
Sure. But I mean, the Javi example is staring you in the face.
Yeah.
If you want to. It's just that with Javi, I had a specific mechanical question in my head that has been adjusted. And I don't know what the specifics are for Moncada. I don't know what they are.
Well, that's okay. It's okay. You don't have to know right now. It doesn't have to be decided today.
Let him play.
Let him play.
This segment is brought to you by Spot Hero. Finally, There's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. I'm glad you described Matt Carpenter's season as the run that he's on. For those who don't know, Matt Carpenter of the Cardinals, on the 15th of May, he was hitting 140 with a 286 on-base percentage and a 272 slugging percentage. He had three homers, 13 RBIs, 23 walks, and 40 strikeouts. That's through 35 games of the season. And since then, he's hitting 338 with an on-base of 438, a slugging percentage of 729. With 28 homers, 50 RBIs, 50 walks, and 68 strikes.
And all of them against the Cubs.
In 75 games. Goldschmidt is the same way. Remember how bad Goldschmidt was for a month? Yeah. And now look at Goldschmidt's numbers. My God.
Herbie, I think if the Cardinals were in it, he'd be right there in that conversation. I think at this point, it's probably mostly about Baez and Arenado. And it might be that whoever has the bigger September and the team has a better September might be it.
Isn't it best for baseball, though, to have Baez be MVP? Just better for the overall sport to have Baez as the MVP.
Why? In terms of his marketability? Or
exactly. Javi is my personal favorite Cub of all time. And I'm not that into baseball like that, but Javi forces me to watch.
I think if you pulled Cub fans, I'll bet you 90% would say he's their favorite player.
And that's been true for a little while. I bet that's true. And you know what's funny? You know, when I wrote a Javi Baez appreciation for the website a couple months back, and in that I wrote that he's probably your favorite player's favorite player. And I saw that T-shirt at Wrigley the other night. Saw somebody saying, Javier Baez, your favorite player's favorite player. So whatever Jamoke, I totally wrote that. And the guy's got it on a T-shirt. And then I found the website that has that T-shirt. And you know what it also says? Next to it, it says, Anthony Rizzo is good at baseball. That sound like a Dan Bernsteinism for the way that he's talked about baseball, guys? So there's somebody out there listening to the score or reading score stuff and taking phrases and profiting.
The number of phrases that I've had
and that have just been thrown out to the world.
That have wound up making money for others.
Sure.
Would be enough so that I wouldn't have to do things like this anymore with you. When we come back, Spiegel, I want to talk about cookies. I want to talk about cookies.
Well, what do you want to do in the 3 minutes before we break?
I say we just break now so right, that we don't have to start it and then finish it in the next minute and 19 seconds.
That's fair. That'll work. Don't you think it's ironic that you can just throw something out there like your favorite player, somebody takes it, and then you can sweat blood the way I do trying to push Guagi onto the public, and it goes nowhere other than Kevin Fishbane at The Athletic.
I don't think it's irony. I think it's stealing.
It really is.
I think it's thievery.
That's probably true. Rosner's Cookies on display. When we come back on The Score. 670 The Score is where you are. Tony Gill and Herb Lawrence on the other side of the glass. Spiegs and Rosner in for Lawrence Holmes. Cookies, the topic from Barry Rosner right the hell now. What you got, Bear?
Well, Matt, 7 was more than 6 the year that the Cubs kept Chris Bryant down for whatever it was, 6 games or 8 games, that was.
I think it was less than that because there were rainouts. If memory serves right, there was 10 days, but 6 games, maybe you're right.
Yeah, I have it here somewhere. I believe it was 8 games. Games total.
Okay.
7 is still more than 6. I know Sox fans would love to see Eloy Jimenez and or Michael Kopech.
I'm so disappointed that this is not actually about cookies.
And this, really? I do like cookies.
I was kind of hoping for cookies.
Weren't you, Tony?
Let me say this about homemade.
Don't invoke the name of cookies and then not talk about cookies.
All right, let me say this about cookies. My favorite cookies are my wife's homemade chocolate chip cookies, which I ask her to make very thin and very crispy very well done.
I just had cookies exactly like that at my wife's company picnic like a week and a half ago. And I forgot how great they can be. A simple chocolate chip cookie made that thin and crispy and just at the edge of overcooked?
Yes.
Just at the edge.
Yeah, almost burnt.
You guys like burnt cookies?
No, no, no.
Almost.
Not burnt. Not burnt, Tony.
Just well done.
Tony, sit back and let the adults talk, okay? Sit back and you let the smart people talk about the cookies.
Herbie, who did Tony not know who I was standing next to at the Hall of Fame in that picture in front of my display case with my vendor's uniform? Who was that he did not recognize?
Some guy named Andre Dawson.
That is disgusting. Disgusting.
Tony's a young man. Tony's like, who's the big black guy?
Then he was like, I thought it was Hank Aaron.
Oh.
He didn't say that.
Oh, that's rough.
He did. I did.
That's rough.
Then I had to do like a Rolodex. How many of black baseball players do I know?
Uh-huh.
And
well,
I think I
got
to.
Like three of the majors.
No, out of the history of baseball, that man got 12.
12.
12 black baseball players.
Yeah. 12.
And Herbie helped me out with one.
How low did he go on the totem pole of black baseball players? Like, who's the worst guy on
Corey
that list?
Corey Patterson.
The worst guy on the list is probably Carl Edwards.
Yeah, Carl Edwards, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, because he met him one time.
Cool guy.
Carl?
Yeah, very cool guy.
I like Carl. I interviewed Carl a couple times. Nice guy.
Yeah, everybody else had to be like a Hall of Famer or Jermaine Dye.
By the way, Andre Dawson, your friend Andre Dawson? Hell of a speech he gave at the Hall of Fame, by the way. I don't know. You know, you guys ever hear that or read that?
That was pretty good.
That was really good.
Pretty good.
Not
speech.
As good as Santos' one. Ron Santos' speech.
Vicky Santo.
That's what I'm saying. Vicky Santo. And I know she wrote that. She sweated blood.
She
right
said
in that
she
thing.
Cried when she wrote it, which is an interesting way to look at it, since she hated it the first time she heard it read to her.
What about the Sandberg one?
It's a whole other story.
That's some of the best stuff ever. She hated it. The first time she heard the speech read to her, she hated it. But then she later cried when she wrote it.
She was like, I might be able to work with some of that. She'd never heard of the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
It's not a famous movie. Not a big movie.
It's not just the greatest Christmas movie of all time. It's a top five movie all time.
It's just like in Spinal Tap. It's, don't worry about Boston. Not a big college town. Not a big one.
Anyway,
cookies.
Anyway, she cried.
Cookies. Oh, no, Andre Dawson. Your guy, Andre Dawson.
Yeah.
Funeral director.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been in that business for a while. I don't know why that's suddenly a story. I guess people didn't know, but...
No, people didn't know.
Yeah.
You've been holding out.
Well, he's in several different businesses.
He's teaching kids to swim.
Yeah.
Because he himself learned to swim. And he's directing funerals and managing dead bodies.
I would imagine him a very comforting... soul to talk to when things
absolutely
in that moment. We've been through some of that in the last year, and you run into people who are just like, we just want to charge you a lot of money, and by the way, you're going to be getting more bills. You're going to be getting more and more and more bills, just so you know. The dying business, very expensive.
Oh, yeah, I know, but I could absolutely see the gravitas and presence of an Andre Dawson be extremely comforting unless the Eric Schau family came for a visit.
That's a fair point. I don't think he shed any tears that day.
Oh, no.
But he's a God-fearing man and a good soul, and I would think that that'd be a comforting person to speak with.
All right, I do not want to take you too far away from your intended cookie conversation.
All right, so the key to the crispy, thin cookies with the chocolate chips is that they're dunkable, and I like to have them for breakfast. And I will get like a whole plate of them and dunk them in my coffee, and that's my breakfast.
The culinarily ignorant Barry Rosner. It's finally reared its head. It took 2 hours and 51 minutes. Dude's eating cookies for breakfast. He's got the metabolism of like, what, like a 12-year-old girl, does Barry. And the figure. After all, he's got the metabolism and figure of a 12-year-old
girl. And the
girl.
Emotional well-being. Not to mention stability. I like that that they
cookies
don't
for breakfast,
I like
really.
That they don't fall apart in the coffee.
Okay.
And if
that's
you get
great.
The if you get the really like if you use too much flour, I think it's the flour that makes them bigger. Is that right?
I'm going to trust you.
Believe
this.
It's the flour.
Okay.
Anybody know anything about baking cookies? No, nobody's helping. Tony and Herb are looking at me, and they're not helping.
Mm.
I believe it's the flour that makes them thicker, puffier, and those
that's probably true.
Those tend to fall apart then in the coffee.
Oh, that's disastrous.
Well, then you just got to scoop it out with your hand, and you know
it's hot.
tot.
Yeah.
If it's too hot, you're not scooping it out for a long time. Then you end up just drinking the cookie later on as you get to the bottom
of
the cup.
You don't want to drink the cookie. Do not drink the cookie.
Well, it's disintegrating in the very hot coffee. But if they're thin and crispy, then they're perfect for dunking.
Can I give the credit to these guys that I wanted to, speaking of food?
Yeah.
They espoused the magic of Gordon Ramsay's scrambled eggs to me when I was sitting in here for Lawrence Holmes a couple weeks ago.
Tell me about it.
And I proceeded to make them for me and my wife, and then I made them for a house full of 19 and 20-year-old girls, which is another story. But
like an interesting story.
It is. The Gordon Ramsay scrambled eggs, where you crack the eggs into the saucepan, you put a pat of butter in there with it, so everything's cold together, and then you heat and scramble with a rubber scraper in the pan, 30 seconds on the heat, 30 seconds off the heat, scrambling the whole time. Put it back in. So what happens is, as the eggs slowly cook, it merges with the butter into this remarkably fluffy and yet somehow oozing kind of egg magic when it's done. And then you add a spoonful of creme fraiche at the very end just to like really take it up to that upper echelon place, and then sprinkle some fresh chives on the top. Sweet Jesus, those eggs are the truth. And you put them over a piece of excellent toast, like a piece of sourdough toast. If you can time all that out while the bacon is in the oven, so you're freed up on the stovetop. If you can time all that out, like I have done once or twice, then you are a breakfast master, and you are beloved by millions.
That all sounds very nice. I just have two questions. What would adding cheese to the equation do to all of that?
I thought about that too.
Because if I'm going to have scrambled eggs, there's going to have to
be
cheese.
Yeah, I do the cheese thing,
but not mixed in.
Right.
Because it cooks at a different rate and temperature than the eggs.
The benefit of making the eggs this way is the temperature aspect makes everything blend better.
Correct.
When everything is the same temperature, it blends better. If you're going to do the cheese thing, you have to get it out of the fridge and just kind of leave it out.
So it's not cold.
Here's what you do. At the very end, even after you put the creme fraiche in, or maybe just before, if you want, sprinkle some shredded cheese on top.
I'm going to need a lot of cheese.
Yeah, but that's fine. Just, you know, get a bag of shredded cheese. They sell that in the cheese aisle, Barry. And you put your hand in there, right? You with me so far?
Yeah.
Put your hand in there, take some of the cheese out with your fingers.
Yeah. I eat some? Because I like the shredded cheese just cold eating it.
Yes, you can. You can. But yeah, just sprinkle a little shredded cheese.
But
there
Tony says it's got to be room temperature so as not to affect the temperature of the scrambled eggs.
Well, that's what I'm saying at the very end. Yeah, if you have it, and that's a smart thing. If you have the cheese at room temperature while it's out there, then it just takes like a moment to melt on those hot eggs.
I have one other question regarding that, and that's the butter. What if butter is prohibited by those who generally do the cooking of such things?
I'd probably kill yourself, because butter is really important in all cooking. And if you can't have butter, then I think you're done. I think you just mail it in at this point.
Can you have vegan butter?
I don't know what that is.
I think it's butter not made from cow's milk.
Well, then it's really not.
That's not butter. That's not butter then. You could use fake butter,
it's
probably.
It's like soy milk. Soy milk, it's really not milk. It's juice. They should call it soy juice.
Right, or almond juice. Almond milk is not really milk. Or is it? I don't know.
I don't know. I've had almond milk. It's fine.
You guys
it's absolutely fine.
You guys with me on the butter solution there for Barry?
I don't know.
Is that a little firm?
I heard Tony laughing from behind the glass, not on mic, when you said kill yourself.
Well, I'm just trying to strategize and think
butter
about
butter makes everything better.
It does.
I know.
I can't imagine my life without it.
Well, what if you live with healthy people who already don't approve of the way you eat? And don't allow for cooking in butter.
I see an option that's not quite as severe as killing yourself.
Moving out.
Divorcing. Yes. I think divorce.
After 26 years.
Right.
Divorce over the butter.
Butter.
When you've stood by each other through, you know, children and problems and health and all the things that we deal with, I think butter as the final the final straw.
See, the thing is,
makes a lot of sense.
It does make sense given all the things that we have endured over the last 26 years.
Listen, babe, I love you, but
I need butter. I want my stuff deep fried in butter.
I just got to be with somebody who cooks with butter.
I've tried that method without the butter. It doesn't work as well because it does, even with a nonstick pan, it sticks to the sides. So, and I've tried it with olive oil. It doesn't work either.
No. You need some kind of legit fat like that that the butter would provide.
So not Pam or anything.
I don't know about, like, I can't believe it's not butter or you know, shed spread or that kind of. Or those kind of canola-based butter substitutes? Does she use that stuff?
Yeah, and that's not even that much extra fat. I mean, eggs are, what, 200 calories?
Yeah, I don't know.
Bunch of protein.
I think it has something to do with the way that it fries and how bad it is for you once it's fried.
The butter?
I believe so.
Oh, well.
But I'm not an expert on such things.
No, you're culinarily ignorant. We've established this.
You love saying
that. You know why? Because culinarily is hard to say.
Yeah.
And it's fun to say.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when I remember when I went to South Dakota on a RV trip, right? A great RV vacation.
Did you go to Deadwood?
I did go to
the Black Hills in Deadwood?
Absolutely. Went to the Black Hills.
That's
the Badlands.
So cool.
All over the Badlands.
I'd love to see the Badlands.
Oh,
someday.
My God.
I'd like to see St. Andrews first, but at some point I want to see the Badlands.
You got to go see the Badlands. It is so worth it. And I would come back from that and I'd say, you know, topographically speaking, as I often do, it was fascinating,
that's a trip. Good word,
right,
too.
So to be able to say topographically speaking, like culinarily ignorant, it's just, it's exciting for word dorks like myself.
I mean, as far as that whole divorce thing goes, your wife has kept you, you know, living in a great lifestyle and great body that you are in currently. So
that's true.
For me to tell you to put butter in anything, you know, look at me, look at you. So go with the wife.
Yeah, we'll do a side-by-side of Herb Lawrence and Barry Rosner when we come back on 670 The Score.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.